Hello and welcome back to the Ring Editor's Chat with me, Tris Dixon, and I'm joined as always by Dougie Fisher and Tom Gray. As we know, Dougie has been off to Texas with where he's watched Ryan Garcia and in fact that whole Golden Boy card. Doug, good trip?
Yes, yeah, it was. I missed Texas. I've missed San Antonio. I think it's my favorite city of all of the boxing crazy cities of the great state of Texas. All of them have boxing history, El Paso, Dallas, Houston, and certainly San Antonio, a lot of boxing talent there, and just a lot of boxing fans there. It's like the people of San Antonio treat amateur boxing the way they would, you know, peewee football or baseball. It's almost like a high school sport in that region. So there's a lot of fans, and about 15,000 turned up to see Ryan Garcia's return. And that's not bad considering that event basically competed with an annual festival that is hosted by San Antonio. And it's like all of Texas descends upon San Antonio, and it's just a lot of drinking, a lot of eating, a lot of foot traffic, and a lot of just car traffic as well.
Did you eat too much?
I ate way too much. I ate way too rich. I didn't drink that much. You know, that was my saving grace. That's why I'm here today. I didn't drink a lot of beer, but I ate a lot of rich food, a lot of Tex-Mex, and sort of like gourmet burgers. Nice. So very heavy, but that's what people go there for. But they go to San Antonio at this time of year to do just that. They bar hop and they drive around and they just eat and drink. They don't go to a lot of events. And so the same night as this boxing event was, there's a night parade that happens at the same time, which closed down a lot of streets, made it very difficult to get to one place to another. I had two Uber drivers cancel on me, picking me up from my hotel to take me to the Alamo Dome, and a taxi not show up. And then luckily the third Uber driver showed up and picked me up, took us forever to get to the Alamo Dome. But she was a boxing fan. In fact, she was watching the DAZN card on her phone. Anytime we were stopped, she would check in on the fights. And she had boxing gloves hanging from the, you know, from the rearview mirror. And she had sons who box. She had an 18-year-old who has been boxing as an amateur for 4 years. Very proud of it. And just a lot of people just love to chat boxing.
Did she know who the great Dougie Fisher was?
She didn't. Can you believe that?
Casual fan. So
amateur level.
Yeah, exactly. So Tom, how have you been doing?
Pretty good. I put on about 4 pounds. So that's me getting back up to being a bit fatter than I was last week when I talked to you guys. But yep, all good.
Golovkin's got you running scared out of 160.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll come on to Golovkin. Dougie, obviously, first things to first. Well, you were there on Ring Business as well, as we touched upon last week, right?
Yeah, I was there with a Ring Magazine championship belt to award to the winner of the flyweight unification bout between Marlon Esparza and Naoka Fujioka. And it was a tremendous fight. Probably the most competitive fight on that card, as a matter of fact.
Okay, that's good to hear. And, you know, when did you get a feeling when you give the Ring Magazine title to someone, like, was there a sense that it was a special thing for the recipient?
Absolutely. And they will tell you that. And everybody who sees it, even if it's the person at the airport, like going through security, they're like, what the heck is in that bag? When you take it out and show them, it's like that reaction in Pulp Fiction. Every time they opened up the briefcase and the glow, they're like, whoa. You know, it's like everybody, even people who aren't into boxing, right, who don't read Ring Magazine, when they see that belt, they're like, oh, this is one of those championship belts. But it looks different than a lot of the belts that I see on TV. And it's special to everybody, even fighters who own 2, 3, 4 ring title belts themselves, like Bernard Hopkins. They want to see it. When they see I have it, they're like, hey, get it out. Let me see it. I want to touch it. I want to hold it.
That's great.
I didn't get to hold it very often. Every time I went on stage, like during the press conference or during the weigh-in, Oscar De La Hoya or Bernard Hopkins, they wanted to grab it.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of like represent it. And I'm like, hey, that's better you than me.
Yeah, Tom, were you gonna interject there?
No, incidentally, I went to Syracuse, and that's the airport you go to when you're going to the Hall of Fame. And I had a belt with me on that trip. I was flying from JFK to Syracuse, and the guy, it was the exact same thing. It just sets off the security instantly, and they open up the bag, and the guy's looking at me and looking at the belt, looking at me and looking at the belt, and he said, "Are you any good?" And I'm like, listen, I'm just carrying it. It definitely wasn't earned in the ring as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, just when Doug said that, it's a lot of fun when you take it through security, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, Tom, you'll obviously never be a ring champion, but pleased to say that this week you are number seven with the WBA.
Oh, thanks. Yes. Hopefully at Bridgerweight. In fact, I don't know if they're doing, I don't know if they're doing Bridgerweight yet.
Dougie, so Ryan Garcia, what did you make of him?
Well, I thought it was a successful comeback. He'd been gone for 15 months, about a year and a half. He was rusty. The speed and power is there. He didn't lack for confidence. And here's one thing I noticed. Listen, he's 23 years old. If he can continue to healthily make 135 pounds, he's going to be the biggest lightweight out there. Just watching him stand next to Bernard Hopkins and Gabriel Rosado, I'm looking at him. He's their height. He hasn't filled out the way they filled out, but he is filling out. So he absolutely dwarfed poor Emmanuel Togo, who I think was definitely intimidated for at least, 7 or 8 rounds. And I don't know if Togo was just in survival mode or if he was hoping to take Garcia into deep waters and then try to get something done. And it looked like he tried to a little bit in a few of the late rounds, but he just didn't have the power, didn't have the commitment to his offense to really make anything happen or take advantage of some of Garcia's sloppiness. But physically speaking, he has tools. There's something to work with. He is a formidable force with his explosive offense. The problem was his application. There was no jab. He followed to go around. He did not cut the ring off. He didn't go to the body enough. When to go would fire back, he would back straight up, and his head was straight in the air. So he was vulnerable in that respect. So technically speaking, there's a lot to work with there, but there's a lot to work on. And I think Joe Goosen understands that. They didn't have a very long camp together for this fight. It was just their first fight together. And I think Goosen is one of these trainers that understands that it is a process. It's going to take a few camps for them to gel. And it's going to take a few camps for Ryan Garcia to understand some of the tactical and technical aspects of boxing that Goosen is going to try to instill in him.
Yeah, Tom, let me ask you about Garcia out of the ring. Obviously, he said that he wanted to time out from boxing because of mental health and mental wellness, which obviously in this day and age we understand more and more. I'm not sure he would have got away with that 20 years ago in this sport because, the landscape's changed for the better, obviously, in terms of that as well. But out of the sport, obviously, he's admitted to those problems. No problem with that. He's moved to Joe Goosen. How long is he going to need to sort of stabilize everything? And I suppose activity is going to be key for him, right?
Yeah, and I think getting the 12 rounds in, even though he wasn't really tested in those 12 rounds, it's still good to be out. I mean, if you come out there and blasted out to go in a round or two, you don't really learn anything. And I think, to Doug's point, that Joe Goosen will iron out some of the flaws that are there in terms. I thought he was attempting to cut the ring down. He just wasn't very good at it. The guy was giving him nothing to feed off of. There was no counterpunch opportunities. The guy was strictly on the defense, and it's hard to open someone up if they're not giving you anything to work with. And I thought he came under, it's just the social media age. I thought he came under too much criticism for the fact that he went 12 rounds. He's not the first highly touted fighter that's went 12 rounds with an opponent he wasn't meant to. So, it's not really any major surprise. I think that's him, Chris, to be honest. I think, getting 12 rounds under his belt, he's back. He's not got the pressure of the comeback attempt, if we can call it a comeback. I think that's him back in the mix. I would expect to see him in a big fight. I think I'm quite high on Ryan Garcia. I think he's a threat to any lightweight in the world, just strictly because of his hand speed and his power. If he catches you cleanly, if he catches you in between punches, if he hits you with a shot you don't see, I think you're in a ton of trouble, and that's any of them. I think he's ready for the biggest fights out there. I can foresee him perhaps getting one more fight before he goes into a really big fight. What I thought was interesting as well was he was not eager to get down the whole Tank Davis route, despite being prompted, because I think he's just accepted the fact that boxing politics suck and getting these fights made aren't going to be easy. But I hope a big opportunity comes his way, because I think he's a really exciting talent.
Yeah, I think it's, you guys have touched upon it here. Sort of when you have a guy like Tagoe and he's faced with someone like Garcia's hand speed, you're reluctant to throw, aren't you? Because you know that the guy is going to be throwing punches at you faster than you can bring your hands back to defend yourself.
Yeah, so you understood. He understood that lateral movement was his saving grace. He had to keep moving. He needed to move his feet more than he moved his hands. And on top of that, he has a kind of a unique, unorthodox rhythm and style. His style is not orthodox at all. And piggybacking on what Tom said, Garcia is at his best as an explosive counterpuncher. He needs you to, he prefers an aggressive fighter, especially if he's taller than him, because they're right in line for that hook or that check hook or that left uppercut. I did notice he was using his right hand a little bit more, and there's equal power with the right hand. He's still very comfortable firing off with that left. He just needs to have a more consistent jab. And the one thing I noticed, in terms of ring rust, his timing, his reflexes were off just a little bit, because he came close to landing the sure shot against Tagoe. But once again, piggybacking off of what Tom said, I think it's good for him to get 12 rounds under his belt, even though it wasn't a hard fight, physically speaking. His face was clean after 12 rounds, but it's good for him just psychologically to say, I've fought the championship distance. I can go 12 rounds, because he's never gone 12 rounds before. He'd only gone the 10 round distance twice in 2018. So it was about that he needed some rounds to get under his belt. And I think it will serve him.
Sure. And that's probably why Tagoe was selected, right, Tom? Someone like that, durable, just going to give him some rounds and warm him back into the landscape, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, let's not mix up words. It's Golden Boy's premier fighter at the moment. Ryan and Virgil Ortiz probably up there in terms of talent, but in terms of marketability, I mean, if Ryan Garcia wins a massive lightweight fight, that's him kicked open the door. It'll only take one, you know, it'll only take one big win from Ryan Garcia to cross into being a potential pay-per-view star, or however they want to work it on DAZN, although DAZN's going to have a pay-per-view arm soon enough. So I think that Ryan's just one fight away. So you don't want to risk him coming back against, you know, too big an assignment. I thought that Tagoe was a fair enough opponent given the time out of the ring that he'd had.
Dougie, maybe this is a little bit unfair putting you on the spot like this, but tough. You know, whose fault will it be if Ryan Garcia doesn't get the big fights? Are Golden Boy going to not allow him to cross the street? Is he not going to fight Cambosis, Lopez, Tank, all those guys, Lomachenko, because of Golden Boy? Or is it going to be the guys, you know, just wanted to keep control of their own fighters? Or is it just a complete mess?
You know, yes, boxing is a mess. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But where Garcia is concerned, he is in charge of his career. He tells Golden Boy what to do. He has that attitude and he has that agency because of his popularity. And he knows what his worth is. I can hear him. I was backstage with him a lot, and I could hear him say things like, you know, when he would go live on his Instagram, he would say things like, okay, now we're really going to be seen by millions, as if I'm not being seen by millions when I'm broadcast on Golden Boy's YouTube channel or on DAZN. It's when my personal platform is activated, that's when I'm seen by millions. So he knows what his value is. And we can argue about whether it's inflated or not, you know, because it is a branch of social media, and he still hasn't accomplished what his popularity would merit. Okay, but it's not like Golden Boy can say, "Hey, if a fight with Tank Davis is available and he wants it," it's not like Golden Boy can tell him no. That's what I'm saying. So no, I wouldn't blame Golden Boy if it didn't happen, and you know, I think, and you know, and I agree with Tom, you know, he needs another fight. Okay. But if he can get busy and he can fight at least three times this year, the third fight could be something special. Will it be Tank Davis? I don't know. That's the fight that everyone's talking about, because the lightweight division is kind of locked up right now with the major belts, with Kambosos versus Devin Haney. And they have a rematch clause. And whoever wins that fight, the winner of that fight is, or the winner of that rematch is probably going to go for Vasily Lomachenko. Devin Haney has just signed a deal with Top Rank, and Lomachenko is a Top Rank fighter. And Kambosos and Lomachenko had been scheduled to fight before Lomachenko honorably had to pull out and focus on what's happening in his home country of Ukraine. And I think Kambosos respects that, and I think Devin Haney respects that. And I think they look at him as really the man to beat. Whichever young gun becomes the man, the undisputed champion, I think they would want to prove themselves against a Lomachenko before they take on a Ryan Garcia. So it's like Ryan Garcia and Tank, they're kind of left with each other.
Sorry, Doug.
Yeah, just one more thing. I believe there's something in Ryan Garcia's contract that enables him to step onto other platforms when it is a pay-per-view situation. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about that, but I've heard about that.
The stars may align because, as I understand it, Tank Davis isn't exactly happy with the way his own career trajectory is going, or he's voiced that. So the stars could align, because where else are the two of them realistically going to go? If you've got a rematch clause with this fight between Kambosos and Haney, and that's going up again, that's going to stretch into 2023, no doubt about it. So realistically, if boxing functioned like a sensible business, which we all know it doesn't, if it did, this would be the perfect time for, you know, I know there's not anything on the line. Probably Tank Davis holds some lightweight title that no one in the world recognises, but it wouldn't matter. It's that big a fight, that big an event. It's massive. And I'd love to see that fight take place. And I actually like...
Yeah, the winner would go number one for the ring, right? Most likely.
Maybe, but who's to say they'd do it at 135? It wouldn't shock me if they had a catch weight at 138.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter.
Tank doesn't mind weighing a couple pounds heavier. He's proven himself at 140. And Ryan, I mean, he right now looks like a big junior welterweight. Yeah, he will fill out to be a welterweight one day.
I was watching a fight the other day, and it was the anniversary of it. I put on Barrera and Nazim Hamed, and the only title at stake was the IBO. They called it the featherweight championship of the world because of Nazi's, you know, status at the time, and because Barrera was probably, you know, touching on the pound for pound list. The bottom line is, if it's done correctly, if the two fighters are attractive and have huge fan bases, it doesn't matter what's on the line. I don't care. Have that at 138 pounds and call it anything. You know, it doesn't matter. If that fight gets made, it's a massive event, regardless of what's on the line.
Sure. Dougie, just one more on this, then we'll switch gears. Obviously, you were privy to some of the stuff behind the scenes in Texas. How legitimate is Ryan Garcia's respect for Oscar? Because they do seem close, and you know that, you know, Oscar's putting stuff on social media with them together and stuff.
You know what? In past years, sometimes you know, Ryan's relationship with Golden Boy, it wasn't on solid ground. They were kind of beefing. Ryan was younger. I think he's definitely more mature now. I think that time away from the ring, the 15 months away from the ring, has been good for him. He's kind of, I think it made him appreciate boxing more. I think he missed it. And I also think he's, in taking sort of agency with his training situation and bringing in a Joe Goosen, and Goosen holds court almost as well and is almost as loquacious as Bernard Hopkins. He talks. But what he says, I mean, whatever he tells you, especially when it's away from the cameras, he means it. There's a reason for it. And Bernard is the same way. And what I was noticing is whenever Oscar, Bernard, or Joe would open their mouths around Garcia, he's all ears. Even if they weren't talking to him, if they were talking amongst each other about the old days, if they're talking about stuff that happened in the 90s, he's listening. He's wanting to absorb it all. And I wouldn't say he's quite in awe, but I would definitely say there's a lot of respect there. And it seems more comfortable between Team Garcia and Golden Boy Promotions than it has been since they signed him. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, because it felt like from the outside looking in that sort of Team Canelo felt like they outgrew Oscar a little bit.
That's a good point. That's a good point because things were very frosty between Eddie Reynoso and Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy. And so when Garcia was part of Team Reynoso, I think that was part of it. I think maybe that was part of the friction between Garcia and the promotional company. That's a good point.
Yeah. Tom, changing things up, Golovkin fought Murata as we expected, really, in Japan. Obviously, we expected to fight, but, you know, the fight went as many called it, you know, maybe a little bit to find his feet and shed the rust, particularly at 40 years old, for a few rounds. And then he hurt Murata in what was the fifth or sixth round, and Murata never really recovered, right?
Yeah, and see the way you've just explained that there, you would think that Golovkin would be getting all the plaudits, but he's been getting pissed on from a high height because, you know, he basically took a few punches and he got hurt, shock horror, in a prize fight. He got hurt to the body, but I thought Golovkin did pretty good. I wasn't like looking at it through my fingers, worried about Golovkin in the fight. I thought Murata performed brilliantly. I mean, a lot of us put stock in Golovkin's inactivity, but Murata was out for 29 months. So I thought he did himself proud. And to me, Golovkin has never been invisible. He's always been open to punches. He likes to engage. He likes to get into a certain range, let his hands go. And if he's taking something back, he's got the confidence to know that he 9.9 times out of 10 is hitting harder than the other guy. So, yeah, I was pretty pleased. I think you touched on it there. He hurt Murata with a combination in the fifth round, and Murata never got his balance back. Or not so much his balance. He lost his shape and started throwing kind of wide. And because he was doing that, Golovkin was finding all the empty spots from that point onwards. And if Golovkin is landing on you as frequently as he ended up doing, you're not going to last. You're not going to stick around long.
And Dougie, obviously, one of the things about Golovkin is he does seem to be a gentleman of the sport. You see him giving his robe to Murata and see plenty of respect afterwards. Is that one of the things that's endeared him to so many people? The fact that he's this sort of, obviously an absolute beast in the ring, but outside of the ring, softly spoken, polite gentleman. It's that sort of contrast in personalities, isn't it?
Yes, and I think he's always said that he views boxing as a sport and that the participants should be sportsmen. And I knew if he ever defended his titles or ever ventured to Japan, that he would fit right into that boxing culture, because that's the same mantra you hear among not just the fighters in from Japan, but the boxing establishment in Japan, is that everyone has to have respect for each other. And that's cultural. That goes, business and interhuman relationships there. But it's intensified with boxing. And it's what you always hear from the fighters is they have to be dedicated. They have to train hard. They have to be humble, and they have to respect the human being that they're facing across that ring. And I always knew that if Golovkin ever fought there, that he would appreciate it and they would appreciate him probably more than other regions of the planet. And I think it was evident. I think that was evident before and after the fight.
So, Tom, let me ask you this. You've obviously written a column people can check out on the ring's website. In the aftermath of the Golovkin fight, but hey, he's now a unified champion. He's a big money option for Canelo, but it's not a bad time for Golovkin to walk off into the sunset and sort of go out on his terms.
I would
say, screw you to Canelo.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have absolutely no complaints with that whatsoever. I think he's a great, great fighter, a great middleweight. An argument there that I don't know if Doug agrees, but I think the best middleweight of the last 20 years. I can't think of anyone that would really challenge him. Canelo never had as long a run, and because of the controversy surrounding both fights, it's Golovkin is the one that's been the sustained force through 160 for such a long period of time. I just think, I spoke to him, and he bristles when Canelo's name has brought up, and that's a real potent rivalry. I think that providing they can sort out contract squabbles, if Canelo comes through Bivol, who I'm not underrating at all, that's the direction that Golovkin will want to go in. I find it amazing. I've got people talking to me, oh, do you not think Canelo will struggle to make 160? And I'm like, what planet are you on here? Like, you know, Canelo
won't
can't
happen
make,
at 160.
Yeah, Canelo can't make 160 without chopping off a limb. So that's not going to happen. It'll be at 168 for all the titles. And I think if the contract can get made, I think that's the direction that Golovkin, regardless of how he makes out, you know, he's coy about it, like, oh, you know, if it happens, it happens. I don't believe that. I think his competitive spirit has got something inside him where he wants to get it sorted out. And initially I was against the third fight. I felt as if we've seen it twice and Golovkin's on the steady decline. But I gave it more thought. And I think in the same way, and I mentioned it in the story, that, you know, Thrill in Manila was not considered a massive fight for Muhammad Ali going in. It was an old rivalry, but Ali was a massive favourite. And you ended up with arguably the greatest fight ever. And a lot of people feel definitely the greatest heavyweight fight ever. So give the guy a chance. You know, he deserves it. He's a terrific fighter, and it's been a great rivalry, two good fights. So let's see it again. I'm leaning towards seeing it now than I was before.
Doug, let me ask you this. Is that a Vegas fight?
It could be. And it might be too big for the MGM Grand Garden Arena or the T-Mobile Arena. It might be the perfect prize fight for that stadium where the Raiders football team plays. I wouldn't be surprised if Team Golovkin still has a bad taste in their mouth from what happened in Las Vegas in 2017 and 2018. If they wouldn't push for a big stadium in Texas, like the AT&T Stadium, or even the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, or New York City, where they feel more comfortable, where they feel like they're the favored son, right? They fought at the Garden, multiple times. I think Canelo's fought there once when he fought
Fielding,
yeah. So I don't know. Money talks. At the end of the day, money talks. If Vegas really opens up a checkbook, if they make it worth the while for both promotions, that's where it's going to land. But it's so big. Oh, let's not count out Los Angeles. Let's not count out Los Angeles. Los Angeles has always been welcoming to a Mexican superstar. And Golovkin has a home out here in Southern California. He used to train out here in Southern California. He has a lot of fans, including Mexican and Mexican-American fans from the greater Los Angeles area that would definitely support him. I could see that fight landing at the SoFi Stadium right here in my hometown of Inglewood. Fingers crossed.
I like home games.
I could walk there. Yes, I could. Yeah, it's a 10-minute drive.
Okay. Hey, when we were talking about Golovkin there, we were talking about gentlemen fighters and so on who's doing it for the sport. I had a really frank conversation with Conor Benn this week, who fights this weekend against Chris Van Heerden over here in Manchester. And he was talking about this. And there's been a few fighters now. More and more I'm hearing about... it's that ethos that we all get in life at some point, but it's about living to work rather than working to live. And to the point that, you know, Conor was under no illusions that he's doing the work as a boxer to give himself and his family a better life. Obviously, Canelo's saying is no boxing, no life, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting dilemma, isn't it? Because you're a long time retired and... you know, it's, you put all your eggs in that one basket of boxing, you take your eye off the ball, you're not really prepared for life after boxing, which is such it's a precipice that guys get to the end of the cliff and where do you go? Tom, let me have your thoughts on that, really, and that outlook. I mean, you can see both sides, I guess, but what's right and what's wrong?
I think you should always be prepared for life after boxing. And I think fighters benefit. Not all of them are fight fans. You know, I've spoken to fighters, once the career's over, they want to go in a completely separate direction. That would maybe benefit. I know that Anthony Joshua, for example, likes the sport, but he might want to go, you know, completely business orientated, stay away from it. A fighter like Anthony Crawler, I was speaking to long before he retired, you always knew that Anthony was wanting to give back and train fighters and have a gym and that kind of thing. So you get like, it's a difference of opinion on what direction to go. But I think, to your point, either way you're going, you need to have your post-boxing life sorted out or in your head. You need to put the wheels in motion. It just can't be a major distraction when you're at the top of your game. I always felt that Anthony Joshua was a bit too distracted with the amount of things that he had going on. I thought he had his fingers in too many pies. But, you know, I think ultimately he'll benefit from that when his career is over, because he'll have so many different directions to go in.
Dougie, no boxing, no life. Is that true or just a slogan?
I think it is true. I think whether or not they have a love for the sport or the craft or the business, and a lot of them, by, you know, midway through their professional careers, they get kind of sour on the business, even if the business is working out for them, financially speaking. It has a way of, you know, when they first are introduced to boxing, they're fascinated by it, or they're drawn to it because it's something that they do well. And, you know, they're fighting for trophies. They're fighting for medals or for nothing at all. They're just fighting for their own satisfaction, and they're learning, and it's very special. And I've had a lot of fighters tell me that the happiest days of their lives is when they were amateurs, and traveling with the national team, if they were that good. But even if they were just like at the regional levels, I've had them tell me that's when I really loved boxing, before I turned professional. So the business has a way of souring them, but they're still fighters. When they leave the sport and they leave the business, something's missing. Even if they leave the sport and remain in the business in some way, they still miss it, because their identity is still that as fighters. So, you know, it goes beyond preparing financially. Just because a fighter puts money away or has a good management team behind them that is going to set them up financially, they have jobs lined up for them, whether it's in or outside of boxing, where they can make a comfortable living, it's still difficult. And we've seen it. We have multimillionaires who struggle. A lot of times, whatever, they'll get involved in drugs and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Just to replace that adrenaline rush, to replace the excitement that actually fighting once brought them. So I think fighters have to prepare psychologically.
Yeah, I think that's a massive thing. Guys, we will get to our rant now, which is, I know, is already bringing a smile to your faces. You guys aren't prepared for this. Dougie, I'll go with you first. You got 30 seconds on this, okay? A big win over Chris Van Heerden makes Conor Benn king of the welterweights this weekend.
Well, of course it does. He's Conor Benn. His last name is Benn. His dad was the Dark Destroyer. He's an exciting fighter, and Chris Van Heerden is a tough South African. He's nothing if not durable. I mean, how many rounds did Chris Van Heerden go with Errol Spence? He goes rounds with everybody. So Conor Benn gets rid of Chris Van Heerden. He's the man of the welterweight division. Everybody's going to want to fight him.
Okay. Hey, you're getting good at this. It's taken 3 weeks, but you're getting good.
Rah, rah, rah.
Tom. Marvin, you know, this is talking about life after boxing, I suppose, so it's a bit of a segue into this. Marvin Hagler used to say, it's tough to get out of bed when you're wearing silk pajamas. Disagree. It's easy to get out of bed when you're wearing silk pajamas, because?
It's easy to get out of bed when you're wearing silk pajamas because you've had such a great night's sleep and you're super comfortable. And you should just be dying to get out there on the road and put the miles in. I've never understood why Marvelous Marvin Hagler said that. Much respect, but easy. Much easier to get out of bed and go some miles and see at the end of the day when you come back, grab a shower, get back into your silk pajamas and go back to bed.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've got to give that to Tom this week. Yeah, I think even Dougie's bowing to that superiority. That was great. In fact, I never looked at it like that. But
there you go. Easy, if I had a great night's sleep, get out the road.
But then obviously you saw the, you know, when Marvin was training out in Cape Cod in those freezing conditions, that sod that, just get back in
there. Yeah, I didn't add that into my diatribe there.
No, but hey, guys, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, guys, anyone listen to this, I've got interviews going up with fighters this week, going up on the website. Conor Benn, Tommy McCarthy and Chris Billum-Smith, who are in a cruiserweight clash on the Manchester Bill. Tom, what have you got coming up on the site? Actually, you're under the cost for the magazine.
Well, magazine, yeah, that's right. Magazine right now and for the next 24 to 36 hours. But I'll be speaking to Tyson Fury hopefully this week, but that will go on the website the next week.
Nice. And I see on our chat, we've got people who've spoken to Bivol. We've got people who been ringside left, right and centre.
Plenty coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Loads of good stuff coming up. Dougie, what's going to steal the show in the magazine that you're working on?
Oh, I think it's going to be the cover story. I don't know if I should give it away, but it has it goes beyond boxing. You can probably guess what the subject but it's much bigger than boxing. I'll leave it at that. And I'm very happy with the cover story, written by a former ring editor-in-chief.
Great. Okay, what a great tease that is. Okay, guys, well, look, thank you so much for joining us. As always, really appreciate your time, and we'll be back soon.
Thanks, lads.